It's my nerd world, the Star Wars show. Welcome to a brand new year and a brand new episode. I'll be talking Bad Batch, Season 2, Episodes 1 and 2. We have more interesting Ahsoka live-action show details and a possible shooting date and maybe details on the post-The Rise of Skywalker film that might be the next one that we'll see on the big screen and your listener feedback. Thank you so much for checking out the show. Let's get right to it.
It's an instinct. A feeling. The Force brought us together. We're not alone. Good people will fight if we lead them.
People keep telling me they know me. No one does.
But I do.
Long have I waited. And now, you're coming together. Is your undoing. Confronting fear is the destiny of a Jedi. Your destiny. The Force will be with you.
Always.
Yeah, I watched The Rise of Skywalker over vacation. You want to know why? Because the movie is just that damn good. Watch The Last Jedi, too. Welcome to my Nerd World, a Star Wars show, and I am your host, John Justice. Brand new year, and I hope your year is off to a fantastic start as we talk about all things Star Wars with some pretty exciting news to share with you this week. As far as the holidays went, I took some time off. Didn't get a show in before the end of the year because I needed a break, but I'm really excited to be back and talk about all the Star Wars that we'll be getting this coming year. As I mentioned a moment ago, we have some details on the potential sequel trilogy era film. Also, some more details about the live-action Ahsoka TV show that I'm excited to share with you as well. But let's go ahead and let's start off with The Bad Batch Season 2. Recording this on Thursday, debuted yesterday, sat down yesterday afternoon, watched both of the first two episodes. Was not surprised to see Episode 1 open on the footage that we saw a big chunk of in the trailers for the show. Typically, that's how the promotion of these shows goes, is that we usually get quite a bit of the footage in the first few episodes. They don't end up spoiling all that much. Couldn't help but get, even though there was no correlation whatsoever, and I'm sure it wasn't intentional, couldn't help but get Avatar 2, The Way of Water vibes in the beginning, in that beginning scene on whatever planet the Bad Batch and Omega were on being chased by those crabs. Just the vibe and the color scheme of the creatures on that planet. I immediately was thinking about Avatar 2 when I watched it. Loved both of the episodes. They weren't groundbreaking by any stretch. I was kind of expecting a little bit more, and it's only because of what I'd heard. I was expecting a little bit more in terms of references to other material. And while we certainly did get that in The Bad Batch, I thought it was going to be something more original trilogy era. But the tie-ins to The Clone Wars, obviously, and there's no escaping that given The Bad Batch dovetails right off of The Clone Wars, but specifically going to Count Dooku's former compound, which was of a delight for me and my 15-year-old Kyle, because we're currently watching all of the Star Wars content in order. And right now we are right on the first few seasons of the Clone Wars, watching them in chronological order for the first time. This was his idea. He wanted to watch everything Star Wars related, apart from like the only because I haven't brought him up. I bet if I bring them up, he'll make us watch them, but I'm not going to. So apart from the holiday special, which I don't know exactly where that falls in the timeline, and quite honestly, I don't want to do the research. Or the Ewok movies, which he's never seen before. We're watching everything in chronological order. So we had just finished up the Night Sister trilogy, which relates to the commentary, the details that we have about the Ahsoka show that's coming out. And in that episode, we have Asajj Ventress and two of the Night Sisters go to assassinate Dooku at his compound. And so in the Bad Batch, we end up going back to that compound. Of course, we had the Separatist droid tanks that were there. But there wasn't anything in terms of difference in storytelling from what we got from season one. That being said, I really did love these two episodes. I really am enjoying The Bad Batch. I'm a fan of The Clone Wars, but I'm not a rabid fan like a lot of people are of The Clone Wars. Really enjoyed Bad Batch season two. And I also understand, I kind of go into watching these knowing what we are going to get. The formula in The Bad Batch mirrors The Mandalorian quite a bit, which mirrors video gaming, in as much as you have this mission, in this case, The Bad Batch needs to go on, much like Mando has a larger objective, but in every episode he has to complete some task to move towards his larger objective. Right now, we don't really know what the larger objective is. The dynamic that's being set up with Tech and Echo and Omega is rather interesting. We're beginning to see the frustration among some members of the Bad Batch in wanting to do to be a larger part of the rebellion against the burgeoning empire. I'm really loving the character dynamics in the show. I love Omega just as a character. I think she's fantastic, and I like that they've aged her up a bit, that we've had some time passed. We knew this was going to happen. But that we've had some time passed from season one to season two, and I'm really hoping we end up getting Omega in some sort of live-action content. I think the big question is, obviously, well, what happens with the Bad Batch and what ends up happening with Omega, since you know, we know where we're going in the timeline of Star Wars, and we don't see these characters moving forward. Now, I'm curious if, with some of the details that we have of the Ahsoka show and what I shared on a previous episode of Ahsoka going to this region along with the upcoming skeleton crew, going to this region beyond that we haven't been to before, in a different part of the galaxy, this could open up the opportunity to move some of these characters, like members of the Bad Batch or Omega, to this other area, in which case we get a rationale as to why they are not involved in the events of, one, the original trilogy, and then two, moving forward, depending on how old we would see them later on, but certainly going into the sequel trilogy. Needless to say, they could also utilize this to bring them into the content that's being created between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. And I'll get into more of this into more of this coming up. But I love this formula, and I like the formula in The Bad Batch actually better than what they do in The Mandalorian, because there's a rationale here of the crew needing to get money to go and be free on their own without having to go and work for somebody to achieve their goal. So, really enjoyed these first two episodes. It was about what I was expecting. Wasn't really surprised by anything. And I'll just be looking forward to watching them on a week-to-week basis. As always, throughout the episode, though, what do you think? Your thoughts on the show? You can email me, talkshownerd@gmail.com, or leave a comment up on YouTube if you happen to be watching there. But thumbs up from me on the first two episodes of The Bad Batch. Curious to see what the larger arc is going to be, sort of the running thread through this season, since I think we got some seeds of that with the tensions that are building, especially with having Omega along with them. But I'm curious to see next week if we get a little bit more of an idea of what that through line is going to be beyond the Bad Batch needing to go out and carry out these missions.
Spark that'll light the fire that'll burn the First Order down.
Just playing a sound element there, and I had the volume turned down. I'm a professional, can't you tell? All right, so we got some rumors that we want to talk about. This comes from Daniel RPK on Twitter, a rather reputable source in terms of rumors. Reported this on the show, but now we have some more details. So Damon Lindelof of Lost fame, The Watchmen as of late, Star Trek as well. He took some part in crafting the stories for the newer Star Trek films. His film that has been speculated and rumored to be working on, along with the female director of the Miss Marvel series on Disney Plus, is set, according to Daniel RPK, which we've already heard, in the sequel era, to begin shooting potentially in April, eyeing a 2025 release. And the other details along with this go as follows. Some characters from the sequel trilogy will appear in the new movie. There will be a new set of leads and a woman of color as the protagonist. Now, first off, I want to say this particular source has come through and been solid on other sources. The specifics of the show, one, we've already heard about the sequel trilogy era, and two, the details that are laid out here, I mean, anybody could have guessed that would have been the case. That really seems to be sort of par for the course of what we've been getting with a lot of new material. In this case, not surprised at all. I think it would be stupid, quite honestly, to not have some sequel trilogy era characters in this new film, specifically Rey. And I'll get to more of that in a second. Having a woman of color as a lead protagonist does not surprise me at all. The April 2025 release, I think, the April shooting schedule with the potential 2025 release, I think, is interesting. That would give them plenty of time to work on this film, obviously. I was listening to Sith Council, and Chris Harloff had mentioned with the Star Wars Celebration taking place in London this year, if they were to begin shooting in April of 2025, we could get an announcement of the film at Star Wars Celebration in London, and with all the set of details. 2025 does seem far off, in my opinion. Now, it makes sense. They probably don't want to rush the production, but I could see this movie actually coming out in December of 2024 rather than a full almost two and a half years for the release. It depends on the approach that they're taking for these movies. Because I want to say that, and I know that there's been a lot of discussion over the rushed, doing nothing with my fingers, production of The Rise of Skywalker, even though it's a film that I love, because of the changeover in director. But I want to say that if they started shooting in April, eyeing a December 2024 release, that would fall in line with the shooting schedule of The Rise of Skywalker. Now, 2025 does make sense when you consider Avatar 2 is supposed to be coming out in December of 2024. So I don't think they would want to have a Star Wars movie and an Avatar movie at the same time, especially based off of how well Avatar The Way of Water has been cleaning up in the box office. And I want to add one more element to this, which kind of has me pushing back on an idea that it would come out in 2024. I think they could do a movie in 2024. My desire would be for a movie in 2024 just because I want to see a Star Wars film back on the big screen. But at the same time, if the quality drastically improves by giving them a much larger window to work with and they're eyeing a December 2025 release, I'm okay with that as well. And I'll bring Avatar 2 into the mix, into this conversation for the length of shooting time aspect of it. They worked on Avatar 2. Now, granted, they shot Avatar 2 and 3 and a part of 4 all at the same time. So the shooting schedule was longer for the Avatar films. But they've been working on that film for 5 years. If you've seen Avatar 2, it is a spectacle. I was thinking about this today heading into the episode that, I mean, really, for all intents and purposes, we're on a planet that is familiar while alien. We're in the water, which is familiar, even though you're seeing alien creatures. These are all things that we have seen in a certain way, shape, or form within Star Wars films, but the quality of the Avatar films, and especially The Way of Water, is just, it's breathtaking. And there's no reason why a Star Wars film can't also be that that breathtaking. You watch the Rise, let's just take, because I watched it, you watch The Rise of Skywalker, and it's a beautiful film. Everything looks photo real in the movie. But you watch a movie like Avatar 2, and there's that next level aspect to it. So that being said, if you have a longer period of time to shoot a Star Wars film, I think you probably have a better potential to create something in terms of spectacle on par with something like an Avatar 2. Avatar, both these movies are really, really unique and special because, again, you're seeing things that are alien. We've seen alien things in other movies, but you compare Avatar to, say, Aquaman, and there's just no comparison. Looking at films that both have major sequences that take place underwater. You look at Avatar 2 compared to what we saw in Wakanda Forever. There's just no comparison. The Wakanda Forever special effects are fine, but it pales in comparison to just how gorgeous Avatar, The Way of Water, looks. And so if you can create that along with a great, compelling, exciting, emotionally rich story, you could have a Star Wars movie on par with that. And I can't help but wonder if that's where we're heading with these, with the motion pictures, with the way that the motion picture industry is changing and how movie theaters are going to be shrinking in size because you just don't have as many films being released as we did before. I really do feel that the movie theater is going to, and I've said this before on the show, but the movie theater is really going to turn into something that is more akin to what I experienced as a kid right before the Megaplex boom, where you have just these larger theaters with a couple of screens that are there because this is the spectacle film that you must see on the big screen. You know, Star Wars ushered in the blockbuster. And, you know, then the multiplex exploded, you know, with the advent of further special effects and what we saw on screen. But now with streaming and so many other options, you know, those lesser films, those dramas, you know, can be seen. And the way the storytelling is different and more fleshed out. I really do think you're going to see another era of films with fewer screens, larger screens, more spectacle, where you'll get your Top Gun Mavericks, your Avatar 2s, your major Marvel films, and your Star Wars movies. So, I wish we would get a movie in 2024, but I can see how 2025 is more realistic. In terms of the details of, you know, this is fine. I just want a good Star Wars movie. It makes sense to bring Rey over. It makes sense because there are a group of people, as we talked about on the show, that the sequel trilogy is their Star Wars. They've grown up with it now. It's been out for, you know, we're going on 10 years, and so they're getting older. These are the characters that they were brought to through Star Wars, and so it to me, it would be foolish to suddenly create a post The Rise of Skywalker film and make it completely apart from anything that happened in the sequel trilogy, especially with what it seems like is taking place with the streaming content between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. So, as always, what do you think? I'm excited about this. I'll be curious to see what this story is going to be about, what the conflict is going to be, how Rey could play into it. And listen, without trying to be controversial, I'll be very interested to see what Bob Iger does in terms of the social dynamic and expectations that we have in our content right now. Let's just say that. I'm talking about the wokeness of it all. Bob Iger has recently said that he really wants to scale back some of the controversies that have, you know, really bogged down some of the recent Star Wars projects. You know, and most recently, the biggest failure next to Treasure Planet in this strange world that just epically bombed. And in my opinion, like it or, you know, like my opinion or not, it's my opinion, I think in large part that movie bombed because it was not tailored for the mass audience. And they tried to do too much, you know, PC in that particular movie, and it wasn't what people wanted to see. So we'll see, because Bob Iger is going to be a part of this, in my opinion. All these, you know, if these things are in motion and we're looking at an April shooting, you know, start date, then, you know, Bob Iger is behind a lot of this. All right, so let's move over, and I mentioned this a moment ago, and get into what I think is happening between the original trilogy and the sequel trilogy, which I think is brilliant, and I hope they're heading this way, because it really does seem like they are heading this way. So here's the recent news about Ahsoka, and this comes once again from Bespin Bulletin, and I'll read right from their website. We've officially stepped into 2023, a year that's set to bring Star Wars fans many exciting projects, including the highly anticipated third season of The Mandalorian, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order follow-up, Jedi Survivor. In addition, one of the most exciting Disney Plus shows is Ahsoka, set to debut sometime this year and will act as a successor to the Rebel series, which I absolutely love. Over the last couple of months, more and more rumors have slipped out regarding the series, and this new rumor has reared its head. According to MakingStarWars.net, a large number of stormtroopers have been destroyed in the series, with their armor obliterated. However, it seems the stormtroopers become reanimated with their armor fixed in a similar way to Kylo Ren's mask in The Rise of Skywalker. Now, Kylo's helmet was reforged and held together with blood-red veins made from Sarissassian iron. The procedure in The Rise of Skywalker was inspired by the kintsugi, a Japanese art which sees broken valuables such as antiques fixed with gold or silver to mend the broken pieces and put the item back together. Unlike Ren's mask, the stormtrooper's armor will be held together by golden veins, once again seemingly inspired by the kintsugi tradition. Making Star Wars speculates that perhaps these troopers are brought back to life with their armor fixed by a variation of the Night Sisters in The New Beyond, which we've reported in previous episodes on this show. But once again, this is merely speculation. These troopers supposedly serve Grand Admiral Thrawn, rumored to be played by Lars Mikkelsen, who I believe did the voice as well. And they will take orders from Baylon, played by Ray Stevenson, Thrawn's second-in-command and former Jedi. And they're led into battle by Baylon's apprentice, Shin, played by Ivana Sokno. The primary objective of Thrawn and the troopers is to hunt down Ezra Bridger, Sabine Wren, and our hero, Ahsoka Tano. All right, so this all sounds super cool. The Night Sisters element in The New Beyond, again, we've heard about. I'm very excited about. I really, really enjoyed the Night Sisters arc and their inclusion in the Clone Wars series. So we've established this idea of the use of dark magic, dark force, if you will, variations on what we've seen of the classic force, you know, from all the storytelling. One thing that hasn't been pointed out with this that I thought was rather interesting. MakingStarWars.net, I was listening to Jason Ward and watching his show. I think it was actually earlier this week, considering it's Thursday. I think he talked about this earlier this week. But he mentioned that, and it hasn't been talked about in a while, but Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau had been very clear that the storytelling that is taking place, and I believe it was specifically in The Mandalorian, but it might have even been related to Ahsoka, is supposed to show the beginnings of the First Order. So how does this play into this particular news? Well, one thing I haven't heard people point out is that we did have a gold trooper in the Resistance animated show. We had the red trooper, but we also had a gold trooper. Sort of very similar to, I believe, yeah, the red trooper was, I'm looking at the, I have the, yeah, I have the Black Series figure right over here to my left. The Red Trooper, and I my apologies for not remembering the names or looking that up. The Red Trooper does have a sort of stylized with the cape, much like Captain Phasma was. But we did have a Gold Trooper in the Resistance show as well that was attached to the First Order. So this would make some sense to me if we're beginning to see the beginnings of color schemes relating to this inception, if you will, of the First Order. Backing away from that a bit, looking in the larger picture here of what we see within The Mandalorian, expectations of the Skeleton Crew coming out with the Ahsoka series, there was the comment that Kathleen Kennedy made years ago now when they made the announcement of all the slate of shows, only a handful of which have actually gone into production, that these would all culminate in a major event. We're seeing the storytelling leading up to the sequel trilogy. And this is what I love. I love the fact that we're filling in the blanks between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, further establishing the sequel trilogy credibility, in my opinion, in the same way that they've been filling in the gaps with these other shows that we've talked about. Whether, you know, it's Rebels, Solo, Andor, now Bad Batch, between the prequel trilogy and the original trilogy. Remember that when the original trilogy came out, we knew nothing of the prequels and where the Emperor came from and what the inception was there, and we had a very similar length of time. We've got 30 years between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. We know a little bit more, in as much as, you know, we know somehow Palpatine returned. We know that Palpatine Snoke. The theory has been for a while now, since Mandalorian Season 2, that Moff Gideon has been trying to get Grogu in his blood, potentially because it's for the Emperor, so he can bring himself back. Perhaps it's for him to go and create Snoke. This is what I'm really, really hoping happens, is that the storytelling that we're seeing, eventually we're going to get direct threads to get further clarity and backstory on Palpatine's decision to create Snoke leading into the sequel trilogy. I understand and I respect the arguments from those that don't like the sequel trilogy, that have problems with any of those films, that complain about a lack of a thoroughly thought out storyline of the three films. I've mentioned many times, I don't care. I love the sequel trilogy. I love the story that they've told. However, I am all about enriching that story even more. And so if these live action shows between The Mandalorian, Skeleton Crew, Ahsoka, I guess I left out Book of Boba Fett, didn't I? Book of Boba Fett. If these all are leading to giving us the backstory as to how the First Order came into being, the creation of Snoke, the rationale behind that, which again shores up in establishing the sequel trilogy credibility, I'm 100% for it. And I guess I failed in talking about the content between the prequels and the original trilogy, Kenobi, and I left out the two weakest shows in my opinion. Again, my only concern with Ahsoka at this point in time, because I'm really excited about the extension of the Rebels story, is simply the quality of the show. And I'm trusting that Lucasfilm and Disney have learned something based off of how great Andor looked, and the criticism that Kenobi got, which in my view is incredibly justified, although, again, it's all subjective. So this has me really excited, and I'd love to know what you think. But this idea of these gold stormtroopers, same type of piecing together as Kylo Ren, it's all thumbs up in my book, and I'm just glad we're getting it this year. I mean, we're only... oh, my gosh, we're only a handful of, you know, only, what, a month or so away? I don't know. When does Mandalorian start? Starts here in the next couple of months, right? So we'll work through Bad Batch Season 2, and then we'll get to Mandalorian and then probably Ahsoka later this year. So as always, what do you think? Leave a comment up on YouTube, and you can always email me, talkshownerd@gmail.com.
Something inside me has always been there. But now it's awake. Help.
All right, listener feedback, even though I played the wrong clip there. It's a new year. I hit the wrong button. Just a couple from last year in the last episode. First one comes from J.O.B., who says, I feel exactly the same way about the expanded universe. George Lucas specifically said it wasn't canon, so I never bothered with it. Thank you, J.O.B., I appreciate that. A friend of the show, also, CVP, says, about these leaks, if they're real, they sound incredible. I have full trust in Dave Filoni to bring the magic. Can't wait. I chuckled when you said there were a lot of folks who wanted the creators to use The World Between Worlds to change the sequels. I was one of them, LOL. My thought was, if somehow Palpatine returned, then somehow Ben Solo can return, LOL. But I've accepted that they probably won't bring him back. Sigh. But I'm excited to see how they use The World Between Worlds in live action. I hope you and your family have a very Merry Christmas. We did, and thank you very much for both of the listener feedbacks this week. I actually had a thought that I think it would be really interesting if Star Wars did something similar to the What If series of Marvel, but they use The World Between Worlds. You could actually do quite a bit with that. For those that don't know, World Between Worlds was an episode towards the end of Rebels where you enter into this space where there are portals, basically, where you can go to other events within a timeline, and it was an integral part of the Rebels storytelling as it related to previous episodes where some characters were pulled out of one timeline to go back into that timeline again. It had some major ramifications. It was time travel, but it was different. You could do a what-if, like, Marvel show with Star Wars, with World Between Worlds. You could actually leave it canon as long as you didn't end up changing anything permanently. I think that would be very interesting, almost like a Tales of the Jedi, if you've watched that animated series, which is fantastic. You could do shorts where you could do what would happen if an individual went in and messed with this particular timeline using the World Between Worlds, but... again, it doesn't end up changing anything that happened within the existing timeline or canon. I think that could be really interesting. One more last thing before I let you go today. I heard Steph Stabra, I think I'm saying her name right, on the Sith Council made a really interesting comment. And they were discussing the potential of this new post The Rise of Skywalker film. And... just her general excitement for this particular project. But mention how, you know, we need new entry points into Star Wars for younger generations now. There needs to be the new establishing for them. While Star Wars A New Hope is fantastic, the expectation that young people are going to go and watch that film and be impacted by it the way that I was as a 5-year-old is very, very small. Based off of how entertainment is now crafted in 2023. So these new films are going to be very, very important for these new generations to create and establish. I don't want to say new rules, but and I don't want to say reboot, but certainly grab hold and give a new generation of young people something that they can discover Star Wars with, because as time goes on, that original trilogy is going to become less and less relevant to these younger generations of people who may go and see them for historical aspect, but will not be impacted by them, like I said, because of how we were, just because of their own expectations of what a movie is supposed to be. All right, so before I let you go today, I want to remind you that if you haven't, head on over to mynerdworld.net and check out my Embark science fiction space opera series. 7 books in all completes the series. The audiobook, I'm down to my last few chapters of editing the audiobook for book 7, Battle Planet. So hopefully I'll have that submitted to Audible in the next week or so and finally have it available. I hope you'll head on over to Amazon.com or MyNerdWorld.net and pick up your preferred copy. Treat yourself, a friend, or a family member with science fiction written for adults but great for ages 11 plus. Available in hardcover, paperback, and audiobook and ebook as well. Follow a ragtag squadron of pilots and one reluctant hero on a journey of survival from Earth to the far reaches of space as they fight for humanity's future among the stars. If you like your science fiction space opera to be epic, filled with some romance and action, then Embark is perfect for you. Again, Amazon.com, search for John, J-O-N, Justice, or MyNerdWorld.net. So, as always, thank you so much for checking out the show. Welcome to a brand new year, and we'll be next week with my thoughts on The Bad Batch, episode 3 from season 2, and any news that may have dropped between and now and then. I hope wherever you are happy, you are healthy, and you are safe. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye.
The Force will be with you. Always.
My Nerd World.